Okay, good morning.
It actually is a nice morning. Nice and the sun is shining and it's cool enough that you might actually want to be indoors. So, you've spent the last few weeks talking about sort of basic concepts of probability, moving a bit, I guess, into cues, or at least working your way up to cues, sort of, and that's all sort of mathematical modeling techniques that are sort of fundamental to the analysis of networks, and we'll be continuing with that specifically. Connor McArdle will be continuing with that sort of as we progress through the term. What we're going to do for the next couple of weeks is look at sort of another collection of techniques, simulation techniques, which are, again, at least as we're going to view it, they're based on the concept of uncertainty and probabilistic distributions, but instead of getting sort of nice closed form solutions, you plug your numbers into a formula, you get another number out. We're going to try and model the behavior of a system in some sort of random fashion and take a look at what sort of questions we can answer then about a system. Okay. The primary reference for this material is Harry Perrow's Computer Simulation Techniques, The Definitive Introduction, and it's available for free download. Okay, it's about 100 pages long. We go through not all of it, but maybe three quarters of it. But it's fairly straightforward and gives you a good introduction to the sort of basic topics around simulations, well, specifically the type of simulations we're going to do, which are called discrete event simulations. Okay, this is, you can spend quite a while becoming sort of adept at developing simulations, running simulations, and so if it's of interest or if it's of use, if you go on to do sort of research work, you might very well do this sort of thing, even if you go on to work in a company. Depending what you're doing, you may be dealing with simulators. And the reference here, Jerry Banks et al., Discrete Event System Simulation, gives a more thorough discussion of simulation issues. It would cover a lot of similar topics to Harry Perrow's, but in a good bit more depth. Okay. And there are numerous editions of this, but they all pretty much do the same thing. I think later editions tend to focus a little more on network-oriented problems. Okay, so we'll, again, have a bit of high-level waffle. Just why is any of this of interest to us? And the sort of core function of an engineer is to design systems. Okay. And typically, there is a process that is gone through. First off, we can take a look at sort of what do we mean by system, and the basic definition of a system is that it's something that takes input and produces output. Okay, and so what do you need to know? Well, you need to be able to characterize the input, characterize the what you want for output, and somehow say what goes in the middle here that lets you get from input to output. Okay. If that's simple, if it's, you know, you want to take two numbers and add them, then what goes in the middle here is simple as well. But if things were simple, we wouldn't be paid to deal with them. Typically, the systems that we're dealing with are quite complex. And so in this case, we would have some sort of hierarchical view of a system where systems are broken down into smaller components. And so we have our whole system where we have inputs and outputs, but then internally we have smaller component systems. They have inputs and outputs, and in some way they're interconnected. The input of one system is the output of one or more other systems. Okay. And this can go on for many layers. Each of these subsystems can in turn have subsystems. And so it can get pretty complicated to determine whether a system is going to work or not. So that's one thing. Just, we've got loads of little subsystems that are connected like spaghetti. How do we know that when we have our input and we want to get specific output for the input, how do we know that that's actually going to happen? What's going to be of more interest to us here, we're going to assume that, well, the system in some way functions basically correctly, but we're going to say there are additional performance parameters, usually in terms of, well, timing. If you send in an input, the output arrives sort of a reasonable amount of time later. Or perhaps we'll see things like loss. All these performance characteristics we had for a network can somehow be characterized within this framework as well, and phrased in terms of the relationship between input and output. Okay. So what we need then is tools for, well, producing the system and then answering these basic questions. Is the system behaving correctly? Is the system performing according to some desired specification? Okay. And so in an effort to sort of make this process sort of work smoothly, typically some sort of design procedure is followed, and that design procedure typically has a number of stages. Okay, so again, probably the easiest example is you think of what you do when you go to write a program. You'll be writing a Java program, a Java simulator later on. Probably the first thing you're going to do is try and write down what the program needs. So what are you trying to do with the program? After you do that, you start thinking about, well, what functionality do I need? What are the basic functions I'm going to need to write, code up, in order to get sort of the program to work correctly? Then you might think, well, how do I actually code those functions? And you know, only it's sort of at that stage might you actually sit down and start writing the program. Okay. So in the simple example, you're following this design procedure. There are numerous design procedures that are sort of written down, and typically for any sort of large-scale project, some sort of procedure roughly like this will be adhered to. Okay, so just for the purposes of thought, we're going to go through a design procedure, and what we're particularly going to be concerned with is what sort of questions should we be asking at any step in the design procedure, okay? Because what we're interested in here is sort of performance analysis, and this is a type of question that you're asking. So, typically, again, you start out by deciding what are the requirements of your system. Okay, so you say what's your input or your environment, what's your output, what do you want the system to do, what functionality does that mean your system has to have, and again, maybe you have performance requirements as well. The system has to react in a timely fashion. You can only have a certain percentage of errors in the system. Again, things sort of a little bit further along than just it's right or it's wrong. Okay. Now, until you start thinking about how you're going to do it, you can write down what your performance requirements are, but you can't say a lot about whether they'll be met. Typically, the questions are asked at a specification stage are, is the specification complete? So have you written down everything you need your system to do? And is it consistent? So you've written down everything your system needs to do. Is there any sort of contradiction in that? Are you telling the system to do two things that it can't logically do together? Okay. So again, that's not going to be of too much interest to us, but where it's of interest is that's where you sort of write down what your performance requirements are. Okay, so the next step is, again, a high-level design. So you want to think about what sort of the basic components of the system and how they're going to interact with each other. And so what questions you ask, well, are they going to interact in the way you intend them to? Okay, so that's a sort of a correctness. You can also, at this point, start asking questions about performance. If you know that each block takes, you know, sort of a certain amount of time to process data, can you say something about the end-to-end time you're going to process data? Okay. So you can either look from, you know, you can either specify performance parameters for blocks and see if overall the system meets the overall system performance parameters are met. Or you can ask, well, what performance parameters do the blocks need in order for overall system performance parameters to be met? Okay. And so again, we get into detailed design, and we have pretty much the same questions here. Are we going to get the correct behavior out of the system, and are we going to meet our performance parameters? Okay. We may have made some of the choices on our detailed design based on, you know, what we discovered about performance parameters here. For instance, we might have decided that certain blocks are critical and need to be sort of highly designed to have really fast performance. Others, they're not as critical. You can just leave them be. Okay, then you go to the implementation stage, and typically when you have the system, you're still asking the same questions. Is it working? Is it working as it was specified? And finally, in the deployment and maintenance stage, you may still be asking, is it working? Is it working as specified? But you might have another question creeping in, which is, can we adapt the system to meet changing requirements, so changing needs of a customer? Okay. So, this course is all about modeling, mathematical modeling of systems, and where does that feed in to this design process? Well, basically, it feeds in at pretty much everything after this specifications requirement, requirement specification. So, once we're at a point where we're thinking about sort of behavioral aspects of the system, but we haven't actually built the system, so we can't just sort of try it out and see how it works, then you need some sort of model in order to sort of try and reason about how the system might potentially work. Okay. So in this design phase, system modeling is quite important. Okay. Now, the main issue between design and implementation is one of sort of accuracy. Did we model our system correctly so that when we implement it, the implementation is actually behaving as our model would have? So you can go sort of cycle around for that. And finally, modeling reenters when we talk about this deployment and maintenance phase. Typically, if you have a live system, you don't want to just be sort of changing it and sort of asking, well, did that work? So you can again think about modeling your system and then making alterations to your model in order to try and see if, you can do it to explore different choices or to even just see if the choice that you think is correct is going to yield the performance that you desire. Okay. So, bringing that back to networks, we have already looked at sort of what we're considering when we talk about performance in networks. And so we're looking at issues like throughput, how many sort of packets can transit through the network, efficiency, sort of how busy is the network kept, loss, how many packets don't make it through the network. In some cases, blocking, so can we sort of make a connection through the network? Can we reserve resources in a network? And maybe sort of on a packet basis, you can look at delay, jitter, etc. Okay. So, we have sort of very specific parameters for networks that we would like to be able to say something about. And if you recall, we had this very basic model of a network where you had resources or links, nodes, routers, and we saw that, at least to some extent, we could see where our delay and our loss was entering into the system. And if you think about it, you should be able to model that relatively simply in a mathematical fashion. Okay. So, in this course, we're going to look at analytical techniques. And these techniques are generic. They're not just used for networks. But the applications that we're going to be interested in are the networking applications. And the techniques are the ones that are quite suited to analyzing those sorts of applications. Okay. And so one option is, okay, so we have this mathematical model. We can try to get closed form solutions. And for instance, when you look at queues, one of the things you'll be doing is looking at, analyzing blocking probabilities. So what's the likelihood, if you set up a queue in a certain way, what's the likelihood, and it's finite, what's the likelihood of a customer or a connection being blocked? Okay. And there are a lot of questions for which you can come up with analytical solutions, so closed form solutions. A number goes in, a number comes out. But typically, they're going to have to make some set of assumptions about the behavior of the system, which may or may not be realistic. Okay, and a common assumption is on inter-arrival times, so how are the customers arriving and what sort of service do they require? Typically, we assume this is Poisson, not necessarily because that reflects reality too well, but that assumption does allow us to get a lot more closed-form solutions than we might otherwise get. And I'm not going to linger on that because Connor will be going into that sort of in detail and sort of what the limitations and limits are. Okay. Simulation is another way to use these same mathematical models, pretty much, to study the behavior of the system. Here we're typically modeling things as queues or networks of queues, interconnections of queues. Well, typically our simulations are going to do the same thing. They're going to model queues or interconnections of queues. But instead of trying to just get an answer out, what we're going to do is essentially try and create sample behaviors for the system. Okay. So our model is a way of describing how the system behaves, how it evolves with time, and a simulation is going to create a sample of that behavior. Does one sample of behavior tell us anything interesting? And the answer to that, again, is maybe, maybe not. Again, we're going to have to make some assumptions about how our system is behaving in order to generalize from a single behavior to sort of generically how the system's behaving. We'll talk about how that's done next lecture. One other thing we can do, which, again, we don't really cover too much, is what we're covering is trying to ensure that the behavior is in some way typical. Another use of simulations is to try and look at the atypical behavior, the rare events. So, again, you might ask the question, if the catastrophic failure happens, how does the system react? You might be able to tell that by simulations. But since, again, we have three lectures, not a whole course, we're going to concentrate more on sort of what's the representative behavior and how can we draw conclusions about representative behavior of the system. Okay. So, yeah, I've said that for our purposes, the simulation models are quite similar to the mathematical models. Most of it's going to look like queues, but sort of a high level, a simulation is just an imitation of the operation of a real world process or system over time. So again, it's just something that shows you the behavior of a system over time. And so this can be represented mathematically, logically, symbolically, and somehow you're going to have represent the relation between the components of the system and, again, the evolution of behavior within the system. Okay. And so this is going to allow you to sort of observe system behavior. You could just, maybe just try out different scenarios. Okay. What we're aiming for here, again, is a bit more analytical. We want to be able to draw conclusions about the general behavior of the system. Okay. So for queuing theory, you might be able to, again, analyze blocking probability. So what's the average number of packets that are blocked, or what's the average number of connections that are blocked within a system? We'd like to answer the same sort of question using the simulation model. So what we need to do is say somehow we're observing sort of the behavior of the model, and how can we, through this observation, draw a conclusion about the blocking probability? Okay. So this analysis part, again, is going to be next week's lecture. This week we're just going to have a look at sort of just the basics of building your own simulation model. Okay. So again, the simulation testing can be contrasted between analysis and, again, we're going to spend some time in the module just thinking about what the difference between the two is in the forms of what sort of assumptions you have to make for one versus the other, and sort of what's the accuracy of your conclusions for one versus the other. In terms of design, another alternative would be prototyping. So just build a sort of cheap version of your system, or completely build your system. Typically, you don't want to completely build it, but you might try and build the main features and start testing that out. And again, that can be done. But simulation can be sort of a less expensive alternative to that. You don't have to build anything. And typically you can make your simulation successively more realistic. So you may be able to sort of you may be more free to examine alternatives using a simulation model than a testing model. Okay. Having said that, one rule is if you can come up with an analytical solution that you're happy with, do that. That's going to be less work than building a simulation model. Okay. So our simulation model is in some way denoting the behavior of a system, and we are going to have a very specific way of denoting the behavior of a system. We are looking at what is called discrete event simulations. And in this case, the behavior of the system is a sequence of events. Okay. And so, we make the assumption that these events happen sort of at an instance in time, and that pretty much what goes on in between the occurrence of events is stability, is sort of nothing that we're that interested in. Okay. So the events sort of denote what's interesting happening in the system. Okay. Again, in order to get sort of to these performance type issues, we're going to have to examine the timing of events. In some simulations, that also is sort of irrelevant, but for us, the timing of events is going to be significant. And typically, it's not going to be predictable. There's going to be some sort of probabilistic distribution to when events can occur. And again, think back to the queue. You can have arrivals into the queue. You can have departures from the queue. When exactly those happen is governed by some probabilistic distribution. Okay. So, just terminology. An event denotes a change in state of the system. So if you're electrical engineers, you've probably sort of dealt with a lot of continuous state systems. If you have a circuit with capacitors and inductors, you know how essentially voltages and the currents change with time. Okay, and that can be considered state for the system. In this case, again, our state is essentially just what happens in between the events, and our state may influence what events can happen. Okay, so it's also for us a way, it's a representation of the system behavior in the sense that it's sort of what the system looks like in between the events. But also by knowing the state, we might know what events can occur at any sort of point. So as an example, just think of switching a light on and off. Okay, well, the state of the system is the light is either off or on. And we go for long periods of time or short periods of time if you have a two-year-old where you're in one state or the other. What's of interest to us about the system is when the state changes. So it's sort of interesting anyway to see when you go from off to on and from on to off. Okay. When you're on, you can't switch the light on because it's already on. When you're off, you can't switch the light off. So again, depending on which state you're on, you're in, what your possible next events are, changes as well. Okay. And so maybe we care about when lights are going on and off if we know something about lights going on and off, we can determine the energy usage for a room. We can determine how much energy is being consumed by having the lights on or off, as long as we know the times between on and off. Okay. So our system behavior then is just a trace, which is a sequence of events and the time of occurrence of those events. And so in this case, again, it's just cycling between on and off, but maybe we're interested in the times at which that cycling occurs. Okay. Now, our model, again, is pretty simple here. Again, we just we have a state machine, which just, and at any point you can only have one next event occurring. One thing we don't say anything about in this model, again, is the time of occurrence. And so either this is completely unknown, in which case these times could be anything, as long as, well, they have to increase. T0's got to be smaller than T1, smaller than T2. But maybe we know something about sort of the relative times of occurrence. When a light gets switched on, maybe we know there's a distribution in the time that the light gets switched off. Okay. And so, again, something sort of more specific to what we're interested in, cues. And so you have the state of a cue is the number waiting in the cue. And you can either have arrivals or departures from the cue. Obviously, both impact on the state. Arrivals increase the state by one, departures decrease the state by one. Okay. And so what do we know? Well, typically we will put some distribution on the inter-arrival times. Okay. So typically we will say that there is some relation between this event and this event in terms of their times of occurrence. Okay. And similarly with the departure times, typically we'll say that, you know, each departure is going to take a certain amount of time. Okay. And so we put a distribution on the inter-arrival time, a distribution on the departure time. If we're dealing with queuing theory, we can start asking questions about, well, what's the average number of jobs or customers in a queue? What's the average waiting time in a queue? There are all these sorts of questions that you'll be getting to really quickly. Okay. Now, what can we do if we have a simulation? Well, all we can do is essentially produce some behavior, which is a sequence of arrivals and departures with times attached. Again, what we're going to have to do is say that in some way, if we produce this sequence, we can examine it, and through examining the sequence, try and answer the same sorts of questions that we would for the analytical scenario. Okay. So you can use simulations to study a single design. If you know, if you've got your heart set on one, you can study whether that will actually work. Or more typically, if you have a number of alternatives, you can try and compare the different alternatives in terms of performance. Okay, and so you might want to know whether you should use one network technology or another. You might ask where, you know, how would you lay out your cellular network? You can also, again, study changes to existing systems, and so not in terms of redesigning the system, but you might sort of stress test the system if the usage is not, you know, again, we said we specified an input. Part of that was sort of maybe how much usage a system gets. If that changes, if that increases, how is that going to impact the performance of your system? At what point will the performance degrade enough that you might think about having to add more resources? Okay, so what we'll do now is have a look at an example from Harry Perros, which is the machine interference problem. And we'll sort of see, we'll see what this will sort of motivate the components that we're going to need to build a simulation model. And after that, we'll probably take a little break. And then when we get back, we'll discuss the various components that we need for the simulation model and sort of look at some of them in detail. Okay. So here we have a collection of machines which break down occasionally, and we have a repairman, and the repairman repairs the machines on a first-come, first-served basis. So this is our queue. The machines arrive into the queue. They depart when they have been repaired by the repairman. Our repairman's our server. Okay. So again, we can ask sort of what percentage of time is a machine down? Well, that's going to depend on how long the machine spends in that queue, how long it spends waiting to get repaired and then being repaired. We can ask sort of how long is the repairman busy? So that's sort of the utilization of the repairman, or is he worth his salary, or is he sitting around, you know, 90% of the time and only busy 10% of the time? We should find other things for him to do. Okay, so how do we represent this as a discrete event simulation? Well, we need to again write down state and events. And so, you know, ultimately what we want is to produce our time-stamped events. But the relation between state and events is sort of the logic of our system. It says, it's sort of, if an event occurs, what other events lead on from this sort of in the future? Okay, so if a machine breaks down, eventually there's going to be an event of a machine gets repaired. And if a machine gets repaired, well, if we assume that they always break down again, that leads to an event of a machine breaking down again. Okay, so ultimately, what we're going to want is a set of rules which govern how these events occur. But again, it's going to be crucial that you have some concept of state to know to be able to write that down. Okay. What else can be important? Well, time is important. Yeah. All of the questions we asked were about sort of how long, how much, sort of what percentage of time is the machine broken down or is the machine running? sort of what percentage of time is the repairman busy. And so we're going to need to have some way of representing time. Okay. And what we're going to use is clocks. And the clock is just going to write down the time of occurrence of a specific event. Okay. And then we'll have a master clock, which will keep track of time as it progresses. So we start off, we have to assume some initial condition. In this case, we'll assume a condition about when the machines are going to break down. And then what we need are sufficient rules that we can keep writing down, we can keep determining what the next events are going to be. So, for the example, we'll have three machines, and just to keep things simple, everything's deterministic here. The machines run for 10 hours, and then they break down. Okay. Once the machine is broken down, it takes 5 hours to repair. Okay. So, again, we'll have a clock associated with each machine. And that will indicate the time till breakdown, and a master clock to track the overall passage of time. And so, what can we have as the state of the system? Well, we can have the state of the machines. Are they waiting for repair or not? And we can have just a more general repair queue, which machines are awaiting repair. We can also look at the state of the repairman. Is he working or not? Okay, so to start out with, so our events are machines break down, and a machine gets, or a machine gets repaired. Okay. Now, we're actually going to, in order to sort of come up with our breakdown events, we're not only going to need to know that any machine gets repaired, we're actually going to need to know which one. So that sort of information is going to be contained in the state. Okay, so a combination of an event plus state is going to trigger new events occurring. Okay, so we have to start somewhere. Okay, so our simulation starts off with, we just randomly choose times till breakdowns of the machines. Okay. Now at the moment, nothing is broken down, so there's no repair event, so that event can't happen. Okay. What we see now is, well, we know what the first event, just looking at this, we know what the first event in the system is going to be. Our machine one is going to break down. How do we know that? Well, because it's got the lowest timestamp. Of all the events in the system that could possibly happen, machine one breaking down is the one that's going to be the first to happen. Okay. When does that happen? That happens at time one. So what we want to do is we'll advance our master clock to time one. Okay. The other events, the other two machines are still going to break down at some point. Now, since we have a machine broken down, that machine is going to get repaired. It takes 5 hours to repair. So the time of repair is going to be 5 hours hence. Okay. What do we have in terms of state? Well, again, we've got one machine waiting. We know which machine that is, but so it's first and only in the queue. And now our repairman is going to busily repair the machine. Okay. So again, we're just trying to build up the sequence of events. What's going to happen next? Well, we have three events. Machine 2 can break down. Machine 3 can break down. A machine can be repaired. The one that's going to occur next is the one that's occurring at time 4 here. The second machine is going to break down. Okay. Now, again, once the machine breaks down, it can't be repaired, so you don't have any next event. Once the machine breaks down, it can't break down again before it's repaired, so those events are out of play. The third machine breakdown is still going to occur at the same time. The repair, again, is yet to occur. And we now have two machines waiting. Machine 1 is going to be repaired before machine 2. Keeping going. What's the next event then? Well, the next event is happy days. We actually get one of the machines repaired. In order to know which one, we have to know the state of the queue. We actually have to know that machine 1 was the one in the queue first. So once machine 1 is repaired, it can break down again. So that's a future event now, is machine 1 can break down. Okay. Machine 2 still hasn't been repaired, so if it hasn't been repaired, it can't break down. Machine 3 has yet to break down. And we're still going to need to repair a machine. We know it takes 5 hours, so the next machine will be repaired 5 hours hence. Okay. So what happens after that? Again, we pick the next event to occur, which is the third machine breaks down. That changes the state of the queue to add the third machine, and it changes the number in the queue. Okay. Next, another machine is repaired at time 11, and that we know just by looking at the queue which machine that is. That's machine 2. We therefore know that machine 2 is now eligible to break down again. Okay. And so now we have a bit of a dilemma in that there are two possible next events, and typically, the way these things are set up, it usually doesn't matter. You just do one right after the other. If it does matter, well, somewhere in your logic, you've got to have written down that it matters. Okay. So, in this example, we again see sort of the basic components of our simulation model. And we sort of see how we're building this up. We're tracking what the possible future events are. And in order to make a decision on possible the decision on possible future events is going to be dependent, again, on the state of the system. So this is logic. I'm just going to call this system logic. And our behavior of the system then is just the sequence of time-stamped events taking sort of, again, the first occurring event according to our system logic. Now, Obviously, it gets more complicated if we have non-determinism. Okay, so if our times are random, well, it's not madly more complicated, because what we're going to do is we're just going to somehow randomly pick these times of occurrences of the next events according to some probabilistic distribution. But what it's going to mean is that instead of having maybe this very sort of straightforward progression of events here, pretty much only one thing can happen at any time. Potentially, we're going to get into a situation that you can have different sequences of events. And so the sequencing of events might be significant in terms of performance. And the actual timing of the events, we'll see, is going to be significant in terms of performance. So, again, this is what we're going to have to look at in more detail. We're going to take a break in just a minute, but when we come back, we'll look at, again, the system logic and how you describe the system, and also, so very important for us, if our time is random, how are we going to generate these random times of occurrence? Okay. So the rest of the lecture today is, again, just going to be about building simulation models. The next lecture is going to be about, well, once you've built it, how can you come to interesting conclusions? How can you actually analyze the output of your simulation model so that it says something significant about your system? So we'll take a break now. I'd suggest about 15 minutes, which would take us up to 20 past, and we'll continue then. Thank you.